Reading from Exodus. Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the river bank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her slave girl to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, go," she answered. And the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Hear the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to John.
Glory to you, O Lord.
So reading from John chapter 19, starting at verse 25. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please sit down. Dear God, we just ask that you would speak to us this morning. Give us ears to hear what it is you have to say, open hearts to receive it. Lord, each one of us needs something different. Please give us what we need. Amen. So our reading, our Old Testament reading, was perhaps one of the most famous passages. Very few people, I suspect, who have had any knowledge of Bible stories at all don't know about Moses and the bulrushes. I can certainly remember my childhood Bible having this wonderful picture of these big, tall bulrushes in this beautiful basket. But before we get into that story, let's just remind ourselves of the context. How come we've gotten to this place where babies are being killed? Well, for that we have to go back in our Bibles, back to the other very, very famous story, Joseph in his multicoloured coat. We all remember that. How Joseph ended up by a series of events very high up in Egypt, in put in a position to save Egypt from famine, and actually to save his own family from famine, because they ended up coming to Egypt to see him. Well, the Israelites stayed. And they had babies, and more babies, and more babies, and they grew and grew until they were a huge nation contained within another nation. And for a long time, the story of Joseph will have gone from generation to generation, remembering and admiring him and admiring his people. But time goes on, memories fade, and the people in power forget how we got to where we are. Bit of a lesson there, I'm sure. And so this Pharaoh had no memory and therefore no sentimentality about the Israelites. And he became very paranoid. You see, he was threatened by different people living among his people. He was threatened by their difference. He was threatened by immigrants. And he became harsher and crueler. And he made their lot harsh and cruel. I mean, actually, they weren't a threat at that point. They weren't doing anything threatening. They were just getting on living their lives. I suspect his actions made them more of a threat because of the cruel and harsh treatment, which would have, I'm sure, caused unrest. He created a hostile environment. And it grew and it grew. Until he got to the point of not just being horrid to them, but deciding to try and stop, prevent the growth of a nation within a nation. That resulted in death. We're all familiar with the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it took at least four women to keep Moses safe and to raise him in his very early life. And we're going to look at each of these women. And as we do, most of us, I'm sure, are very familiar with coming to Explore Together services. And we often have that question, don't we? Who do you most identify with in this story? So as we're going through these women, perhaps think, who do I most identify with in this story? Remembering, of course, that these women, at the time of the story, had no idea their significance, no idea how it would pan out, no idea of their place in the big story. So the order had gone out that the midwives were to quietly get rid of any baby boys that were born. That was quite a subtle way of starting a massacre, just, you know, a bit on the quiet. They were told when they got there, if they birthed a boy, to kill him, quietly kill him. Evil rarely starts with bells and whistles, does it? It so often starts small and secretly. Small discriminations, small cruelties, escalating quietly, building. But these very brave midwives took a risk. Took a risk that would have put their jobs on the line, and more than that, their lives on the line. Because they thought, phew, I'm not going to do that. No way, that's not right. Well, actually, they didn't stand up and go, no. They just didn't do it. They just made excuses. They just got round. Sometimes doing the right thing does require confrontation, but sometimes it can just be achieved by quiet subversion. I don't know if I've got time. I'm going to tell you anyways. This story that has impacted on my life hugely, actually. A story of quiet subversion. I always cry when I tell this story, and I've told it to you before. I do apologise. But it involves a midwife. Many, many, many years ago, in my role at Joanna, had been supporting a woman who had given birth. I'd been at the birth. And then she had managed to stay on her ward for 6 weeks because she was in a transitional unit. But her baby was being removed one day. Terrible day. And I'd gone in to help her with that. She'd managed in that 6 weeks to stay clean of all substances, which was a miracle. And she was doing so well. She was so determined to fight to get her baby back. But the baby was removed quite late on in the day. And what should have happened, and was, you know, is the rule, is when a baby goes home from hospital, mum goes home too. So what should have happened is this woman, we'll call her Shirley, should have at that point been discharged, which would have meant me driving around the city and finding a homeless hostel at 6 o'clock at night. We knew how that would pan out, full of grief, full of just devastation. But a midwife, and I'm going to cry, who we'd gotten to know quite well, came and quietly said, "Jackie, I have an empty side room. I'll hide her there tonight. But the deal is, you need to be here first thing in the morning, before the ward rounds come, before anybody else comes in the ward, because if she's discovered that she's there, she shouldn't be there, she should have been discharged. But we'll hide her in a side room. And that'll give her a night to get her head together, to get composure, to do her grieving. Then in the morning, she can go to the hostel." And that's what we did. And 8 months later, she managed to get her baby back. That midwife put her job on the line. Quiet subversion. I've no idea if she was a believer, but what she saw was the right thing that needed to be done. I don't know what stage of life you're at. I don't know whether you're in work, whatever your daily work is. But I wonder how willing we are to stand up for what is right, or just to do right in a quietly subversive way. Perhaps we need to consider the week ahead of us and think, how might we escalate our subversive goodness to just make sure that we're carrying out God's kingdom values, even if it might risk us. Then there was Moses' mother. We can all identify with how desperate she and all the other mothers must have been when the edict went out. It's not enough for the midwives to get there, because they're not getting there in time, supposedly. We're just going to kill them. There's going to be a massacre. Moses' mother hid him for a while, taking the risk of that, but babies get too big to be hid quietly, and so she had to do a bit of creative thinking. And what she did was hide him, as we know, in the Nile. And that was a risk for the whole family, because if she was found out, it wouldn't just be the baby that would die, it would be her and probably her whole family. There is a phrase used in social services assessments when you're assessing parenting. It says, can they prioritise, can mum prioritise the needs of the child above their own? That's a real marker. They're able to prioritise the baby's needs above their own. Moses' mother passed that test. She prioritised the baby's needs above her own. But in order to save him, she had to let him go. She, I'm sure, wanted to keep him in her arms and hold him tight. She couldn't do that. That would be too risky. So she had to let him go. I think when I was reading that through, I thought the huge parallels there were with that of the prodigal son last Sunday. In order for the prodigal son to eventually return, that dad had to let him go. Let him go, make his own mistakes, make his own journey, and just trust that good would come out. Well, I have 3 children, and 2 of whom are absolutely at that letting go stage. I've got 1 getting married in May. That's the ultimate letting go. 1 leaving uni and starting a new career in September. So that I know what that feels like, trusting that God can look after them better than I can. Well, I know that in my head, but my heart's got a bit of catching up to do. That's a bit of a work in progress. Does God really know better than me? Not sure. But it's all that we as parents have to face at some point. Good parenting involves, from the birth, letting them go. Trusting that your babies and your toddlers and your children will be okay with other people, will ultimately have to go out there into the world. Trusting that God will look after them. And I think there's a lot actually in life that involves just letting go. Sometimes we're doing things, we don't know how it'll pan out, we get anxious. We just have to let it go. And if you're someone that struggles with anxiety, then just practicing letting go and trusting that God is in control. We've done our bit, now we just have to release and trust. And that's hard. And then we have the sister hiding in the bushes, watching over him. Interestingly, she wasn't asked to do that. There's no, you know, didn't say, "Mum said, go and..." So she did that. And she was there watching, waiting. I don't know what she was waiting for, really, what her plan was. Because, you know, so happened that the princess came along, but it could have been a crocodile or a soldier or a, you know, what was in her mind? I don't know. But she just felt compelled to watch and to wait and to try and have some intervention. Takes a village to raise a child, it says. We said that. Came across a book recently that said it takes a church to raise a parent. And I like that. Church is a fantastic environment to be part of when you are raising children. There is nowhere better. There are very few other places where children will be exposed to such a variety of people. Different ages, different times, types, backgrounds. Few opportunities to have so many people caring for you, being interested in you, looking out for you. We all need big sisters watching over us. Not interfering necessarily. Interestingly, she didn't go and get mum at the critical point. But watching and waiting and caring. I certainly have hugely benefited as a mum being in a church with mums ahead of me on the journey. Mums that I've gone and said, oh, we're having this, talked over this dilemma. And they've been there, they've done that, they've got the t-shirt. And that is hugely valuable. Again, I've probably told you this before, but it seemed relevant. There was a period a few years ago when Martin and I, just by our sheer incompetence really, ended up ill at the same time. So Martin was having chemotherapy exactly the same time as I was having a tumour, a cancerous tumour removed from my stomach. Not great timing. And just shortly after that, walking home actually from church, I think it was, one of my children just said to me out of the blue, Mum, how do people who don't have a church manage? What a testament. You know, what a testament. During her growing up, there hadn't been a lot of trendy young people, to be fair. It wasn't a great hip and happening youth group for her to... But her testimony was, how do people manage without a church? And may every single one of our children... our littlies, to our teenagers, to may that be said by each one of them. That's our responsibility, church, that they go through life thinking, I don't know how I'd have managed without all these people at Otley Parish Church. They've helped raise me. Let that be our clarion call. If we've not particularly taken much interest in young families or children up till now, well, shame on us, and let's make that different. And then we have Pharaoh's daughter. Drum roll, boom. This is a bit in the film, I'm sure. It's a long time since I've seen it. Beautiful princess comes down to bathe, spots a basket. She had a choice at that point. She could have supported her father, supported the Egyptian regime that was getting rid of the Israelites. She could have gone and called a soldier. She could just have thought, oh, nothing to do with me. Moved slightly down the river and bathed somewhere else. Just not, don't get involved. Somebody else's problem. Just kept quiet. But she chose to intervene and to rescue. Now we only get really snippets, don't we? We don't really have much background or detail. We kind of join the dots ourselves. But I think it's reasonable to consider that that was another risk. Pharaoh was not a reasonable man. I don't think her going back and saying, I saw this really cute baby, Dad, can I have him? Might have cut muster. So she must have taken a risk. But she did. And yes, we know that he went back to Mum, but then eventually came to her. For whatever reason, she felt compassion and she went the extra 100 miles. I don't know about your own family situation, but this certainly was a situation where she was not acting out of her own needs. You know, had she wanted just to adopt a child, she could have been any beautiful Egyptian child on the planet, I'm sure. This wasn't about her needing a baby, this was something else. And I think it was a lovely example of God using unlikely people, the equivalent of non-Christians, if you like, to do kingdom work, to uphold kingdom values, to be part of the big picture, even if they don't even know there is a picture. I wonder how ready we are to take those big risks. So, four women, who all played a part in mothering, I would suggest, Moses. A professional, a relative, and two actual mums. Because you do realise Moses had two mums, didn't you? He had his birth mum, and then he had his adopted mum. I guess there are very few things that can be said of every human being on the planet. But perhaps, can we say everybody had a mother? Well, even that's complicated in today's modern technological age. Because sometimes, who counts as the mother? Is it the woman whose egg the baby came from? Is it the womb the baby grew in? Is it the mother who birthed them? Is it the mother who raised them? Is it the stepmom, the adopted mum? Is it dad, who was mom and dad? It's complicated. But then life is. It's rarely like the adverts, the gravy adverts, do you remember? Blossoming, perfect pregnancy, straightforward birth, blissful, happy family, compliant, loving children, all grow up to be happy, successful people, all clustered around the bed when at 98 you slip away in your sleep. I think sometimes that's the picture of life that is celebrated on Mother's Day. Certainly if you go to buy a card, it's a bit like that. Quite hard to find one that doesn't assume your mother is Superwoman, who never did anything wrong. I'm aware that even just using the term mum when talking about Mother's Day is painful for many. Painful for men and for women. Painful for those who've lost their lovely mums. Painful for those who've longed to be a mum, but it didn't happen for whatever multiple reasons. Painful for those who've been a mum, but do you know what? They've been a bit rubbish. They've failed as mums and they know it. Painful for us who've had mums who failed us. And for men who, as I say, had to be mum and dad to their kids. I mean, there's no doubt that when a mum is good enough and has established a relationship that's healthy, mothers are great things. It is a bit frightening that as a human race, we do seem to have this kind of really supernatural need for a mother. I worked for many years with adults with mental health difficulties and of one sort or another, and in one job, it was predominantly just one-to-one work with adults who had revealed or were revealing that they had been abused as children, often 50 years old, first time revealing it. And what was so awful was it was so common to sit across these middle-aged people whose mothers had spectacularly failed them in all sorts of ways, and that at 50 or 60, the only thing they wanted still was for mum's approval. Sometimes mum wasn't even there, she died. But this yearning that mum needed to approve of them was so strong. Another job, I worked in the child and family unit, and one little girl will remain with me forever. She was in the care system because her mum had neglected her and actually poisoned her. Looked after her siblings beautifully, but took against this child and ended up trying to kill her. And you know all that that little girl wanted? Was to go home to her mum. So there is something really inner and kind of about things. But mums and our relationships with them can be complicated. But as Moses' story illustrated, aside from our biological mum, whatever that looks like, we all need and we can all be involved in mothering. It's lovely that we have in the front of our notice sheet, it's becoming more of a thing, I think, talking about Mothering Sunday rather than Mother's Day. I am a mother, and I do mothering. But actually, I'm not actually sure, really, how does that differ from fathering? I think most of the difference, really, is quite socially constructed, isn't it? It certainly differs across the world in different cultures and from family to family. What is mothering? What is fathering? We call God Father, but we also know that God has all the qualities of a good mother. There are passages that liken God to mother. We could just call it parenting, I guess, Parenting Sunday. But somehow that doesn't sound quite so good, does it? doesn't quite cut muster. So I think we should just stick with a gender-neutral mothering that we can just all claim. I am a biological mother. I am also a mother by adoption. I have an adopted child. But I spend most of my days, too, mothering women, adult women, with many needs and vulnerabilities. So we can all mother, and we all need mothering from multiple sources. Some of us have been looking, most of us have been looking at our shapes. In House Groups, we've been discussing what is our gifting and our motivations, our skills, and we looked at, one week, a very complicated list of gifts. And I was struck looking at them again, you know, encouraging, showing mercy, hospitality, helping, pastoral care, among others. Well, we could just clump them all together and call them mothering. So many of the gifts could just be called mothering. We are, of course, all shaped and affected by the roles we play throughout life. Sister, brother, son, daughter, aunt, friend, neighbour, worker. And we're all affected by our skills, our giftings, our service. And our roles that we play and our gifts, they're really important. They do shape us and form us. As do the roles and the gifts that we don't have, but we wish we had, that we experience as a loss. They affect us too. But just in closing, I want to just stress that these roles, they change. Actually, sometimes our giftings change as well. Sometimes quite quickly and dramatically due to circumstances. There needs to be something in us that underpins them, that is constant, that doesn't change if we're to be healthy and happy and whole. Our identity needs to be in something else than our role as mother or not, or any other of them. Our identity needs to be something that won't change, that's solid, that's dependable, that's life-enhancing, that's life-giving. Our identity, who we are, needs to be, we are sons and daughters of the King of Kings. Whatever our circumstances, whatever our regrets, our losses, our joys, we need to know we are rooted in Christ, who loves us unconditionally, lavishly, more than we can comprehend. That is our identity. That is who we are. It's in that identity that we can do the most good, that we can impact the most people, that we can know the most fulfillment. So we can all become good at mothering, whoever we are. We can all celebrate Mothering Sunday together, knowing we are Christ's children. Amen.